Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and you can hear us on WLSC AM and FM Loris Myrtle Beach, and you can hear us on TigerRadio.com, and you can hear us on ScaryCastPodcast.com. This is the one and only ScaryCast. I'm Dr. John Stamey, again live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. We are super excited to be with you tonight. We've got 2022. We've got a great year starting out. We've got an incredible guest, and I've got some wonderful news for ScaryCast that I want to share with everybody. We finally hit 500 organic likes on Facebook.
On Facebook.
And that's right. I want to thank the Fire Kiss Coven, and I want to thank the Coleman Cabal for their members for adding us and getting us over 500. So thanks a lot to the Fire Kiss Coven in Myrtle Beach with 180 members and the Coleman Cabal with 75 members down in Coleman, Alabama, the home of course, Jason McClendon, the head sorcerer down there in Alabama. And we're just thrilled to have everybody joining us, and we're going to have a great time tonight. So first of all, I must introduce our co-host for tonight, the Surgeon General of ScaryCast, the one and only Dr. Trey Donaway. How are you doing, Trey?
I'm doing fine, John. It's nice to be tuned in.
Well, good. Well, you're definitely tuned in with us, and we're so glad to have you here. So thanks a lot. And our man from West Hollywood, the one and the only Devin Tate. How are you doing tonight, Devin?
I'm doing really well, John. Thank you. Glad to be here with everyone and to have John LeMay here with us tonight. So good night.
Absolutely. And we're glad to have you here. We couldn't have done this without you because you are the original co-host with me. So thanks a lot for being here with us. And, of course. Our man in Niagara Falls, Canada. We couldn't do our YouTube without him, the one, the only Mark Johnston. How are you doing tonight, Mark?
I'm all right. Totally snowed in my house. It's a blizzard out there and really interesting weather. It was like a blizzard with lightning and thunder at the same time. I've never experienced that all my years in Canada, like full-on lightning storm and a blizzard. It was quite surreal, actually.
Well, just be careful. I decided it was real interesting. On Friday evening, I decided not to go visit with my friends in Greenville, South Carolina. This morning they've had 11 inches of snow, and it kept snowing. And it is awful up there. And thank goodness I decided not to go. I told them I would come up in 2 weeks, and we'll have a grand time. But I wanted to be careful. I didn't want to be socked in and have to impose upon my friends for a week after all this snow. And they live at the bottom of a mountain, and trying to drive up that hill was going to be terrible. But anyway, so I'm just glad to be here in beautiful Myrtle Beach, where it actually reached 50 degrees. I'm going to make all you guys jealous. So anyway, tonight we have what I believe is the world's greatest paranormal author. He's from Roswell, New Mexico. He knows everything about everything. He knows where all the bodies are buried or where all the spaceships are buried, I believe. The one and only John LeMay. How are you doing tonight, John?
Oh, I'm getting through all right. I've come down with the Omicron, but I'm getting through it.
Well, you better. Oh, and by the way, Robin has Omicron virus, and she's doing better than she was yesterday. And so send your prayers to her. She's a sweet lady, and hopefully she'll be back next week. But, John, so where do you think you got the virus?
Oh, I have no idea. It's so strange, though, because it's the complete opposite of a cold. I mean, the opposite order of the symptoms, because usually with a cold, I start out with a runny nose. Then the runny nose turns into, like, a sore throat. Then you get a fever, and then you kind of have a cough for a few days afterwards. But this one started out with the fever. Then I got the cough. Then I got the sore throat. Now the sore throat's gone, and now I just have bad allergies, and I'm really tired. So it's a weird deal. Very weird, out-of-sequence deal.
Well, we hope that you get better, but, boy, we're glad you were able to make it on tonight. Now, you've got a real treat for us. You've got two brand new books coming out, and I believe they're both with your co-author, Noe Torres. Is that correct?
That's right. Noe and I, we just finished kind of the last books in our series. I mean, we'll probably do a few more, but I mean, these books will complete, you know, the basic series that we started with The Real Cowboys and Aliens, you know, for people, maybe first-time listeners. What that was a series of books where we went through old newspaper articles from the 1800s and, you know, just tried to find all the old UFO or airship stories that we could find. And, you know, eventually we got up to the year 1900, so we did a book called Early American UFOs, and that's the one that, we called it Early 20th Century UFOs. That's what it was called. And that's the one that's dedicated to you, John. That's Early 20th Century UFOs. And we went up to 1919 in that one. So right now we just released our book, UFOs and the Roaring Twenties. And it just came out a couple days ago, actually, so it's brand new. And again, that's UFOs and the Roaring Twenties. So it covers every single UFO case that we could find in the 1920s. And I've got to be honest, this one Noe mostly wrote. He kind of got away with it, and by the time that I was ready to work on it, he'd basically done everything you could do. So I only did one chapter in this book. So this one's mostly Noe's.
Okay.
And
I know you've got the 30s ready to go, but go ahead and start and tell us some of the most exciting stories of UFOs from the 20s, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I'm trying to find one that would have taken place exactly 100 years ago, and I can't find one from January of 1922, but I did find a story from February of 1922. Took place in Hubble, Nebraska, and it's pretty far out because it actually might be the first ever sighting of Mothman, and it had Mothman landing in a spaceship. So there was a hunter one night, I think it was either a hunter or a farmer or somebody who went out late one night, and he said he saw a UFO land, and he said that out of the UFO came a, quote, large flying man with 10-foot wings. And then somebody else that saw it described it as a large bird with red eyes. But he claims that, again, he saw it land or fly out of a flying saucer. So that's a pretty unique tie between Mothman and UFOs.
Absolutely it is. I mean, I can tell you, I've got my Mothman story in my book, Look Up in the Sky, which is on Amazon, and that sounds like the absolute description of the Mothman. That's amazing.
Now, John, I was thinking you said that you actually wanted to start us off, though, with something paranormal from The Great Gatsby. That's what you had told me the other day. Do you remember that?
Right, I did, and I didn't really have a lot of time to do the research.
Oh, okay.
But there are some UFO references in F. Scott Fitzgerald's The Great Gatsby, and I'll tell you what, I'm going to make you a promise that next month when you come on the show, I will have those, because there are some incredible references, and I believe people just kind of gloss over them. But there's a lot of stuff.
Would it be like the light across the water? Is that a?
Yes.
Didn't The Great Gatsby have a light across the water that he looked at?
Reaching back to
high school literature.
Well, you got it, Dr. Trey, and that's one of them. And there are some things in The Great Gatsby's got a lot of stuff in it. It's really interesting. And I mean, Jim Cramer, the finance guru, even came up with the Gatsby index of you know, companies that are high end and everything. It's kind of cool. But The Great Gatsby's got a lot in it. And we've even got down here in South Carolina kind of a carbon copy of of a country club that looks just like Gatsby's Mansion, and they built it in the 40s. So they built it kind of like right after the Great Gatsby. So, yeah, there are a lot of things in that book. And, John LeMay, you've got my promise. I'm sorry I was a little tied up with making a living, but I'll make you a promise that you'll have all that the next time you come on here. But, yeah, the Great Gatsby's got a lot of stuff that's more paranormal than you would think. And thank you, Dr. Trey, for mentioning that. I appreciate it. So anyway, John LeMay, can you tell us a little bit more about that Mothman story? I'm very interested.
Let me see if I can find one of the actual direct quotes on that one. Because, again, that was February 1922, so that's exactly 100 years ago.
While you're looking, John, while you're looking, here's a question I have for you. He said it was a flying saucer. I know in Roswell in the 40s with that flying saucer, that was a flying saucer. When's the first reference to a flying saucer as a flying device that's notable for a UFO?
So in basically the accepted culture, it's Kenneth Arnold's sighting on June 24th, 1947. But Noe and I found some earlier ones. I think the earliest one we ever found was outside of Dallas, Texas in like 1870-something. A farmer saw a UFO, and he did call it a flying saucer. It's just most people forgot about that one. So usually it's credited to Kenneth Arnold in, you know, June of 47.
That was the Roswell incident?
No, it was just coincidentally right before it, you know. Again, that was Kenneth Arnold. I can't remember where. I think he saw him over, like, Mount Rainier, Washington or something. And that was June 24th of 47. And the Roswell crash just happened a little over a week later in July of 47.
So in this reference from the 20s, did he call it a flying saucer or did he describe a saucer? Like UFO.
Well, I finally found it, so I'll read it verbatim how my co-author Noe wrote it. He says, according to the story, on February 22nd, 1922 at 5 a.m., the witness William C. Lamb was out hunting in the snowy woods near Hubbell, Nebraska, when he encountered some strange tracks in the snow that he subsequently followed, trying to determine what type of creature might have made them. As Lamb moved farther into the woods, he suddenly heard a high-pitched shrieking noise that was seemingly coming from the sky above him. Looking up, he saw a dark, circular, or spherical object flying overhead. So, okay, I guess he didn't call it a flying saucer exactly, but again, I guess it was a dark, circular slash spherical object, and he said it was brilliantly lighted. And he says the UFO descended out of the sky and moved closer to his position. The craft landed in a hollow or depression nearby him, and moments later, from the area where the ship landed, which was about 65 feet away, there came a bizarre flying creature about 8 feet in length that flew right past Lamb's hiding place. At some point, the beast was described as a magnificent flying creature, and was said to have landed like an aircraft and began walking in the snow, leaving behind strange tracks. And I know some people, in some variations of the story, they gave this version of Mothman hoof-like tracks, kind of like the devil. So that's not in all the versions of the story, but it is in some of them. And it's also said that the hunter, this isn't, again, it's not in all versions of the story, but in at least one version, he rebuked it in the name of Christ, and the Mothman flew away. So, again, though, I think that was the first Mothman sighting.
Well, I'm not a hunter, but what would you be hunting at 5 in the morning in frozen Nebraska in February?
That is a good point, because a lot of people do just make up stories and they don't really think of the logistics of what time they should set their story at, and, you know, but that one was one that Noe was a little skeptical of, but it was just too interesting not to include it, so we did. But I agree, you know, there is some fishy attributes to it.
That's very interesting. And right now, as you know, there have been a lot of Mothman sightings. Of course, we had tons of them near Point Pleasant, West Virginia. But there are a lot of Mothman sightings up near Chicago, and they don't know what to do or say about them. Mothman seems to just, like, appear and reappear. So
when did the Chicago sightings, are these new?
Well, you know, they've been going on for about 6 years. And I spoke with the guy that is, like, keeping track of them. And he said, we don't know what they're about, but a lot of people see them. And I was just wondering.
Are you sure? Well, are you sure they're not just seeing the mayor? She's pretty scary looking.
Well, you know, they could just be leaving, because I understand lots of people are leaving the Chicago area to go to other parts of the nation.
Yeah.
So it just could be part of that exodus of people from Chicago leaving the political troubles behind. The Mothman, I mean, you know, maybe he looks at the tax burden of Illinois and figures, well, yeah, this isn't going to be a good place to live in a couple of years when somebody's got to pay the piper, and he's a Mothman, he isn't a piper, and he's out of here. He's probably moving south.
Yeah.
Did they say he was flying south? See, that would be the thing to find out. Which direction was
he going to Florida?
I think so. He don't have to wear a mask in Florida, so, you know, that would be that might be a plus for Mothman.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he can come on down to South Carolina, because there are no masks worn in South Carolina, I can tell you that.
I tell you, I've been wearing my mask for the past 2 weeks, because I can't afford to get sick. We got to empty out this house. If I get sick with COVID, we're going to fall behind the square. Oh, well. Yeah, I've been wearing my mask everywhere. I haven't been talking to anybody. Not live.
Just from my understanding, listening, that there's some potential ET race that we're dealing with that are moths. Because I've heard of other ones that are like mantis, or like different insect type, look like insects anyway, type of beings. So I just want to get my understanding. There's actually these ET races that are moth-like.
That's a tough one. So, gosh, that opens up a really fun can of worms that I think we can probably talk about for a while. So
we love worm cans.
Yeah. So with Mothman, what was so weird about the Mothman case when John Keel investigated it was Keel noticed that Mothman... Mothman may not be the best name for him. What happened was Mothman was a Batman villain in the comics at the time, and Batman was popular on TV, you know, in late 1967 when all the Mothman stuff was happening. So basically, more than just being a moth-like humanoid, he was more of just a winged humanoid. And again, you know, somebody in the press thought, well, you know, we probably can't call him Batman, but Batman has a villain called Mothman, so we're going to call him Mothman. And that's kind of how the Mothman thing, or the name, came to be, because I don't think he's really very insect-like, other than the wings most of the time. It's just, you know, kind of a humanoid with wings and glowing red eyes.
Yeah.
So with Mothman, though, in Point Pleasant, I don't think they ever saw Mothman come out of a spaceship or anything like that, but there were UFO sightings in the area. And so I think Keel thought, well, what are the odds you're seeing a monster and a UFO in the same area? And then it got weirder, because people also started seeing ghosts, and they started seeing men in black. So pretty much everything but Bigfoot and lake monsters were hanging around Point Pleasant when Mothman was making waves. And, you know, again, John Keel, he just kind of thought, well, this is really just too weird. You know, these things must all be connected. So Keel kind of came to believe that aliens and ghosts and anything paranormal were all connected. And some people think they all kind of hail from a parallel universe. And the author F.W. Holliday, he called it the Goblin Universe, which I think is pretty cool. And
well, you know, so I know Sedona, yeah. Sedona, Arizona, not too far away from you. That has the vortexes, and does this other area have the similar kind of thing?
It's fun to have vortices. I don't think so, but I really wish that Robin was here because I wanted to ask Robin. You know, because anybody who listens
to
the show all the time.
Yeah.
Well, and more than that, though, Robin talks about the Bigfoot kind of as though they exist in another dimension that she can see into. So I wanted to ask Robin, you know, what she thought of the so-called Goblin Universe. And some people call it Magonia, the realm of the fairies, and just the unseen things. So a lot of people think that aliens don't really come from other planets. They're just these interdimensional beings that come from another dimension, and that's what John Keel kind of felt about Mothman.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, now, I tell you what, John LeMay, I would like to interject something here because I'm sitting here with a first edition of John Keel's Visitors from Space. This was actually the first edition, and this was published in England in 1975. And it says, The Astonishing True Story of the Mothman Prophecies. And I have read this book, this is actually a much better book than the one that was published here in the United States. And it has the most wonderful story about the Mothman. This is a terrifying book. And if you can ever get a copy, a friend of mine gave this to me for my birthday, and he ordered it from Amazon in England, and got it. And I just, you know, I keep it right next to my computer because I mean I just can't keep it anywhere else. I've got to keep Visitors from Space. That is the original name of the book, and it's so cool. And what I can tell you is I've had an experience with the Mothman, and would everybody be okay if I relay that story to you?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And it's in the book, Look Up in the Sky, Aliens, UFOs, and Anomalies, which is on sale on Amazon. And what happened was I was moving from Little River, South Carolina, down to Conway, South Carolina. My boss had a house. They had some expensive artwork in there. They didn't want to take it back with them. They actually live in New Mexico. And so he said, we'd like for you to live in our house during the summer and, you know, just be there. And nobody will probably come in and try to break in. And still, they had a couple $100,000 worth of artwork in there. And they just didn't want to move it. It would have been too difficult. So anyway, I'm there, and I'm making my fourth trip from Little River, South Carolina, down Highway 90 to their house in Conway. And what happened was I went to sleep. It was like it was my fourth trip. It was a Saturday afternoon. I was absolutely just demolished, tired. And I know we've all been that way. We just couldn't even think. So I went to sleep. And what happened was I heard a metallic screech right above my car, and I woke up, and I immediately looked in my rearview mirror. I don't know why, but I saw two red, luminous eyes. It was terrifying. And then I looked around, and I was in the left lane getting ready to go down into Pauley Swamp. And if something hadn't woken me up, I was asleep. I would have gone into Pauley Swamp. I was going about 85 miles an hour at that point because my foot was on the gas pedal and it was just pressing down. I would have gone into Pauley Swamp. I would have hit a tree and I would have died. And I was able to get the car back on the road because I was partially off the left-hand lane. I was able to get the car back on the road, and I kept looking in the rearview mirror as I had time just to look up there. And after a short while, after about maybe 5 seconds, those red, luminous, they looked like eyes, they were gone. And so I finally got back in the right-hand lane. I slowed down at Pauley Swamp Church. I pulled off the road, and I was terrified. That is the closest I'd ever – that was the second closest I'd ever come to dying on the road. And it was the most frightening thing in the world. I saw nothing. I got to the house. I left everything in the car. I walked in. I passed out on the couch. I was terrified. But I saw something with bright red eyes was in my rearview mirror, and it stopped me. Something woke me up. It was loud, and it woke me up, and it kept me from having a wreck and dying. And I believe that it was the Mothman, and thank you, Mothman. I really appreciate it. And that's in the book, and that's my story, and I'm sticking by it. So I believe there is a Mothman. Also, I have interviewed Eddie Strain, and I've got an interview with his mother. She was the last car that came over the Point Pleasant Bridge before it collapsed. And this is the disaster on the Ohio prediction that the Mothman kept having, disaster on the Ohio. And I think 70 people died as the Point Pleasant Bridge collapsed. And she was the last. Her daddy was a preacher. He, they drove everywhere. It was in the 60s. It was 1968. And her parents, she was like sitting up, and her mother turned around and said, "Get down." And they wouldn't let her see what was happening. And apparently they were the last car that successfully crossed the Point Pleasant Bridge. So if you don't believe in Mothman, you need to read John Keel's book. You need to see the Richard Gere movie. And that stuff is real. And I've had my experience with the Mothman. Can't help it. I know what I saw. So I'm just fortunate to be alive, and we're fortunate to have ScaryCast with 500 listeners on Facebook, and we just keep going. So I want to thank everybody. And by the way, thanks, John, for mentioning John Keel. This is a terrifying book, and if you can ever find it, it's something that you'll never forget. So I'll shut up now, because sometimes I like to talk too much. Oh, and by the way, I've got another part of the story. Dr. Trey Donaway, am I okay to tell part two of the story?
Sure.
Okay. When I first started teaching at Coastal Carolina University, I was teaching an intro to Excel class. And after about 2 weeks, this boy came walking into my office, and he said, "I'm having a problem." I said, "Really?" And what I would always do is try to make friends with the kids that came into my office, because that's the best way to treat a student and get to know them and get interested in where they're from and all that stuff. So I said, "So where are you from?" And he said, "Point Pleasant, West Virginia."
Well, there you go.
And I sat there. This was before the John Gere movie, the Richard Gere movie came out. He said, "You know, don't you?" I said, "Yeah, I know. I've got a first edition of John Keel's Visitors from Space." He said, "Well, let me tell you. My parents were the high school kids that were in the car making out on the football field and had that experience with Mothman. And a chill went up and down my spine. And I didn't see the kid for a while in class. So it was homecoming weekend. And I'm sitting there in my office because we were all supposed to sit there till 5 o'clock. And I got a knock on my door. And I opened it up, and there was the kid from West Virginia. And his parents were there. It was a little creepy. So I said, hey, how's it going? And mom said, look, our son, I can't remember his name, our son is leaving the university. But he said, you were so nice to him, and you tried to help him. And I wanted to tell you something. And so she goes into her pocketbook, and she pulls out a copy of John Keel's Visitors from Space. She said, I want to give this to you because I was cleaning out, you know, I clean out stuff every once in a while, and I found this book, and I don't want anything in my house that reminds me of the experience that I had. Because apparently John Keel interviewed them. And you know...
And what was their experience,
mom,
John?
They were in a car making out on the football field, and the Mothman landed. It's in the book. The Mothman landed on the car. And they were terrified. And so the man, who is now her husband, he gunned the car. He got it out there, and they felt this thing fly off the back of the car. And she
probably landed on that car because the windows were all steamed up, and he figured they couldn't see him.
Well, probably.
Or he just wanted to watch.
Well, right. Mm. But the point is that they were terrified, and she said, I don't want anything in my house to remind me of that night. And, you know, that is the mark of someone that has gone through an experience. And I learned it. I mean, I looked at her. She was shivering. She handed me the book, and she left.
Yeah, didn't exaggerate. Just told you like it was.
That is exactly right. And that was my first story from a UFO encounter, or, you know, whatever, unidentified flying object, Mothman, whatever you want to call it. The lady was terrified. And the kid shook my hand. They evaporated. They were gone. But this was an experience that I had. It was, and I'm looking at the book. I mean, I can't remember because I've got two copies of the book. One is from Kyle Peckham, my buddy, and one is from this family from West Virginia that experienced this. But their story is in there, and this is the story of the Mothman landing on their car. The lady and the gentleman were making out in the car, and it was terrifying. And she said, I'll never forget it. I don't want anything in this house to remind me of this experience. And you knew she was telling you the truth. So, yes, John LeMay, the Mothman is real. I've got a personal encounter with him, and this family has got a personal encounter with him, and it's just... Mothman's terrifying. It's a UFO experience, and I'm sorry if I hadn't told you this before. You might wanted to have put it in your book, or maybe you'll do something from the 60s. Are you going to do something from the
1960s? No, I didn't know any of your Mothman stories.
Well, you heard him now.
I think you need though to write your straight autobiography though about every, you know, just all your paranormal stuff like your Bela Lugosi roommate that smelled like sulfur and the time you met the devil and just all that different stuff. You need to just do your own autobiography, and it'd be awesome.
Well, I tell you what, I might need some help from a guy, from an author in Roswell. He might be the guy that helps me do it right. So I'll give him a call next week, okay?
Okay.
That's exactly right. The story about Ambrose Bierce was too real. And I think I know where Ambrose Bierce went. So, and Bela Lugosi's great-grandson, yeah. and the Aleister Crowley stuff. And the Aleister Crowley name crops up in the brand new book that's coming out this week. And I'll tell everybody about it next week. It's a little bit of a terrifying book, but that's okay. We deal in paranormal here, so that's okay. So yeah, John, I'll actually about half of it's in Look Up in the Sky, but I've got some stories that I really do need to add, so that's cool. So anyway, back to John LeMay and back to UFOs of the 20s and the 30s.
Yeah, actually, we'll go right back to West Virginia again because what's funny about West Virginia, you know, yeah, that's the home of Mothman. It's also the home of the Flatwoods Monster, which crash-landed.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah, the 1950s. Yeah, you know, the Flatwoods Monster, I mean, if you don't remember the name, it looks like it's got, like, this Ace of Spades hood. It's just the weirdest monster you've ever seen. And, again, it was sighted, like, back in 1952. Braxton, West Virginia, very strange-looking creature. But anyways, you know, that was in the 1950s. NOAA found a UFO crash in Braxton County in 1924. And it's a pretty good one, too, because it's not just a UFO crash. It was a UFO crash covered up by the Men in Black all the way back in 1924. So even back then, they were in operation. But
so
I don't have that, you know, again, that's a chapter NOAA did, so I don't really have it memorized. So if that piques your interest, again, the book's called UFOs and the Roaring Twenties.
Well, do you have any recollections of what he said about the Men in Black? Because I have, unfortunately, had an experience with the Men in Black. It was 1989.
Yes, What I remember in this particular chapter is all of the Men in Black oddly looked Asian. And at this time in U.S. history, you wouldn't really have had Asian men in the government because they were, I think, in the middle of the Korean War and things like that. So it was unusual. Again, they said all of the Men in Black in Braxton County that were sighted were of Asian descent, which is odd. And they were kind of working with the U.S. military.
Were these supposed, like, ET beings, or were they, like, a potential government organization of some high clearance level?
I think in this case they were just basically normal humans, but, I mean, you're right. There are Men in Black that have weird supernatural abilities that seem either extraterrestrial or demonic, you know, because
yeah.
To the general public, they just think of them as government agents, but they do have, you know, special powers in most witness accounts.
Well, I imagine just like we, like, for hunting with ducks, have decoys, that an advanced ET race could have human decoys that we wouldn't even be able to distinguish, but maybe there would be some weird, odd movements or whatever with them. So that's what I've heard anyway with these guys.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, I can tell you they drive around in black cars, and they know how to park their car. They know how to parallel park, I'll tell you that.
No, why parallel park, John? That sounded like a lead into something.
Because for 2 years they were parked below my music store in Clemson, South Carolina. Because I had an interaction with someone which was apparently not something that I should have had, and I was told something
mm-hmm.
that I should not have known, and they were there for 2 years. And sometimes they were outside of my apartment in Clemson, South Carolina, when I was a graduate student. It was
Did they talk with you or just observe?
They observed. They came into the music store one time. They were very peculiar looking. And there was kind of a strange smell about them. And, John, I don't know if you've had any people explain this, but there was a very odd – it wasn't organic smell. It was It was a strange smell. These two dudes came in, and they had on hats that partially covered their face. They looked strange as all get out. They smelled bad, and I was just glad when they left. They walked around, and they didn't say very much, and they left. And then I watched them as they walked down the stairs, and I watched them get in that car, and they sat in that car. This was the same black car that stayed in front of my music store for 2 years. And I felt, I finally got the idea that they were watching me and that they were listening to what I was saying. I mean, like Facebook can do. Yeah, it was strange. Had it happen. It's like, who do you call? You don't call Ghostbusters.
Huh.
Right, John LeMay?
Yeah.
I mean, 1-800-GHOSTBUSTERS, I hate to tell you this, doesn't work. And but anyway, so that was my experience with the Men in Black. It was unwholesome. They smelled rancid.
Hmm.
So that's all I can tell you. I was glad they left my store. Thank goodness.
Was it because you were too much on the topic that they were they thought that you were potentially on to them too much, like an alien topic or something?
Well, no, I'll go ahead and tell you the real reason. A buddy of mine whose father was a colonel and was in charge of a military base, this buddy of mine came up and we had a bunch of drinks, and he told me where the Roswell crash victims went. And it's not Wright-Patterson. It's not any of the places that are normally talked about. He told me, and then I know what happened. He called his dad because he got scared that he told me, and that's when all this stuff started happening. And I will never tell. That one will go to my grave.
So there's clearly some extraterrestrial agenda that's directly interacting with us then.
I'm sorry, say that again?
So there seems to be some extraterrestrial agenda that's directly interacting with us for some reason, then.
Well, I guess. John LeMay, what do you think?
Oh, undoubtedly. You know, we were talking on the phone one night, and you had the Men in Black hanging around outside your apartment, I remember, too. And then the phone would go in and out when we'd have certain conversations.
Yes, I remember that. When we would start talking about certain things, the phone would get fuzzy, it would get staticky, and then we would talk about other things, normal things, it would clear up. But then when we'd start talking about this other, you know, these alien agenda things, it would kind of go crazy. I remember that, and I remember standing outside to make sure that I got good reception, and I couldn't get good reception during certain topics that we would talk about. So yeah, it was all for real. Everybody that's listening, yeah, don't mess around with these people. They're tough, and you don't want to mess with them. You don't.
I just try to keep them entertained.
Do what?
I just try to keep them entertained.
Well, they know that I'm not going to say anything, so they don't have to worry about that. I've got other fish to fry. The last people that I want to come in here is the Men in Black. They're too frightening.
They
really are.
I have a theory about this, which is there's different intelligence agencies that are kind of in like dark government that are like Q clearance levels. So they're a bit like above the military, right? And maybe like you think about Area 51 and that type of thing. But I think that they're actively trying to hide the ET presence here and actively misguiding the cult ET culture that we're seeing here. Potentially a lot of these, I don't want to say ancient aliens is doing this, but things like that could potentially be misguiding us on what we're actually dealing with here. And that could be a part of this intelligence agency that could actually be working with ETs and directly or indirectly too.
John LeMay, what do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, misinformation is a big part of it, because that's the best thing you can do is take a true story and then just come up with kind of a bizarre alteration of it, you know, because there's still truth to it, but now it's tainted by these little lies they snuck in. So I think they absolutely do that, and that the crazy stuff is kind of close to the truth, just with a bunch of just crazy stuff in it to make it seem less believable. And so
there's a lot of real-world examples of this going back in things that are part of counterculture, such as one example that comes to mind is like the Black Panthers. Remember that group? That was a total intelligence agency infiltrated operation. There's always these counterculture groups, and if you think of the ET culture as potential counterculture too, in a way, that these groups could be there to misguide and to essentially social engineer culture and to keep us unaware of what the truth is, what we're actually a part of, what's going on, what's the bigger gestalt and grand scheme of things going on here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that is certainly true. And now, John, we talked about the 20s. Do you have any good stories about the 30s? Because that's a separate book,
Yeah, we're working on finishing that one right now. And I found some really creepy stuff for the 30s book. One story I found had an entire village of Inuit people, like, disappearing. And they say that right before the village disappeared, they saw strange lights in the sky. So there's kind of this theory that maybe this entire village of people was, like, abducted. A better modern example is that movie, I think it's called The Fourth Kind, which allegedly takes place in Nome, Alaska. It's kind of like the Blair Witch Project. I think it came out in, like, 2006 or 2007. It kind of tried to pass itself off as though it was a real documentary about alien abductions in Nome, Alaska, you know, just where, you know, it's kind of isolated, you know. So I think the gist of the movie was that aliens were abducting people there just because it's such an isolated area. Well, this
probably because of global warming,
similar.
You know.
Well, maybe. I don't know.
I think
you can always tie that
to
into
do with
something.
Global warming, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, this one, you know, this story took place in the 30s that I'm talking about, so I think it was still too cold for that back then, so.
Oh, but it was there. That global warming, it was sneaking up on us in the 30s.
Undoubtedly.
So John.
Undoubtedly.
This
Inuit group that disappeared, can you give us just a little bit more information about them?
Yeah, so we're kind of why I started out with the talking about the movie The Fourth Kind was, you know, some people think the movie The Fourth Kind is real, you know, whereas most people just accept that it's a documentary. Well, this story from the 1930s was kind of a similar case because for many years, people tried to debunk it as a false story. They said that there was no actual firsthand newspaper reports from the 1930s about this village that disappeared. Because for quite a while, you would just find mentions of it in UFO books from like the 1980s and stuff. And the story went that there was this fur trapper way up north in the Yukon, and he was heading towards this Inuit village he'd visited several times in the past. And when he came upon the village, it was completely deserted. And what's more is he saw guns there, like the people had left their guns. They had left food cooking on the stove. So it wasn't like a typical migration where they just left their village. It was like they had actually just been plucked right off the face of the earth. Yeah, and they did finally find the newspaper article from the 1930s that proved that it was at least a real newspaper article. Now, the problem with the newspaper article is, for some reason, the guy who wrote it copyrighted it, and you don't usually do that with a news story, you know, a nonfiction news story, so that's kind of another strike against it. But there are records apparently that prove that the Canadian Royal Mounted Police did investigate the disappearance, and they did find an abandoned Inuit village. So there's some sort of truth to it. And again, one of the Mountie reports claimed that on their way to the village to investigate, they ran across some other fur trappers. And these other fur trappers claim that they saw strange lights in the sky over the village. So that's where you get the UFO connection.
Well, let me ask you this. About how many people are we talking about?
I believe it was about 30 people. Yeah, okay. 30 people.
Well, I don't know. 30 people could disappear. Playing devil's advocate, but not much of a devil's advocate.
Yeah. There's probably room in a spacecraft for 30 people.
Well, and you've got the guns that were left and the food that was cooking and probably burnt. That's not usual.
The dogs were left there, too. They found the dogs also, so that's very unusual.
So that's totally unusual. So what you're saying is, all the people seem to vanish, but their effects were still there, including the dogs. Wow.
Yep. If it's a true story, you know, I mean, again, the fact that that newspaper article is copyrighted is really fishy. But other than that, if that article hadn't have been copyrighted, there really wouldn't be too much reason to doubt that story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, if the article is copyrighted, how does that support or take away from the authenticity of the content?
Sure. So, I mean, just look at your local newspaper tomorrow morning, and you shouldn't see any copyrighted articles.
Half the time they don't even put a byline because somebody gave a press release and they just copied the thing.
Yeah, only fictional stories and ideas are usually copyrighted. But if you write, a nonfiction article in a newspaper, at least, that's usually not copyrighted. Maybe if it's in a magazine, nonfiction magazine articles might say copyright this or that author. But it's just in a newspaper, it's very unusual.
Indicate that someone wants to protect the story so they could sell it for movie rights or something in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, in a published article, you just have to cite it, right? Like a research paper or whatever, or nonfiction
things, right? Yeah.
So now, John, when approximately will this book be out that has that story in it?
We don't like to put out too many books at once, so no matter how soon we get it done, I'm sure we probably won't put it out till, summertime or something. Because, like I said, this 1920s UFO book just came out a few days ago.
Right. The reason I was asking is I would like, because she's not on here tonight, Robin is not on here tonight, she's sick and getting better, but I would like to talk with Robin about this story. And I would like to get her remote viewing expertise on it. So is there a possibility that we could get a preprint of just this story that we could talk with it about Robin? Would that be possible?
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Now, I think that would be great because I tell you what, Robin is deadly accurate. Devin, you remember how Robin is deadly deadly accurate when it comes to something like Pabst Blue Ribbon logos, right?
Yes.
I mean, she knew what she was talking about. And you know, it's very interesting when you're dealing with someone like Robin. She's just a nice lady. She's a grandmother from Michigan. My Lord, she can do things that other people can't. And it's like you just sit there and scratch your head and say, how can she do this? But she can. And so that's why I check on her every day. Absolutely. We got to make sure that Robin's okay and we send her good. Let's everybody send her a prayer and good energy that she gets better from COVID. But I'll tell you what, it's frightening the things that she can come up with that are absolutely accurate. And I think because I've used Robin in some of my research and some of my articles, I think that it would be well placed to maybe use the opinion of an experienced remote viewer, because I mean, they're the only people that can go back there and reach back and find out what's going on. So, you know, I don't know. So anyway, you got any more 1930 stories?
You know, I've already forgot what all I was digging up for that one, but I do want to talk about the chapter I wrote for the 1920s book, because it was weird. You know, like I said, Noe had gotten to all the really good UFO stuff, so I was really scrambling to find something that at least seemed UFO-related so I could have, you know, one chapter in the 20s book. And I found the most fascinating story about Camden, New Jersey, from late 1927 into early 1928. And it's called The
Wow,
Phantom
tell us
Sniper.
About that.
So it's a weird story, and it's called The Phantom Sniper, and it's such a weird story, especially in terms of how it may or may not tie into UFOs and aliens. So basically, for about half a year in Camden, New Jersey, there was a good chance you might be driving along in your car and you might hear a gunshot, you might not, but all of a sudden you'd see a hole appear in your windshield, like a bullet went through the windshield, and then when you'd go to search for the bullet, you'd never find it. And what was always happening is they would report, you know, the sound of a gunshot and then the bullet hole in the glass, but they could never, ever find a bullet in their upholstery. And so that's what they started talking about, the phantom shooter and his invisible bullets, because this was happening just all the time. You know, a lot of these stories, Noe and I investigate, they might have one newspaper article. Maybe it's not even a newspaper article. Maybe it's just hearsay. But the phantom sniper had to have had, like, at least maybe 20 articles written on him, it, whatever you want to call it, because this was happening, like I said, almost every day for a span of, you know, almost 6 months, and people couldn't figure it out because they could never find a bullet.
What time?
Potential
what time
explanation
was
for that?
The explanation they could never figure out, but the time frame, though, let's see, was November of 1927. I might have overshot it. I think the whole thing might have burned out by like either February or March of 1928.
So it happened.
Potential explanation of it.
Weather.
Mm-hmm. Do you use
what's
weather
your explanation?
As an explanation?
Well,
no.
How about if you shoot? How about if you shoot ice? How about if you shoot ice, real fast, high velocity ice? That would
okay, Trey,
be
that,
hard.
That's how it, yeah, that's how it gets into maybe not UFOs, but the cosmic realm. Someone mm-hmm. theorized that it was an Oort cloud, O-O-R-T, Oort cloud, in space that has frozen particles. Now, the only mm-hmm. problem with the Oort cloud theory is that should only happen one time because the Earth doesn't
right.
get bombarded. Exactly. So
ball
that's
ball
what makes it so weird.
Ball lightning is a phenomenon, and if that's moving at like a speed that's breaking the sound barrier, that could sound like a gunshot. And if there's a specific seismic activity in that area or whatever else geological with ball lightning, I think that could be a reasonable answer for that.
Yeah, that's another
good one. Wouldn't you see
it?
If it was ball lightning, wouldn't you see it? Wouldn't that be
pretty
visible?
But it's like a plasma
visible?
Thing or whatever. I don't know what it is, but it's like, you know, not necessarily, though. Like some you might, but... You know, if it's a phenomenon that science has talked about, right? And if it's moving really fast, it'd break the sound barrier, it would create sonic boom, so there's a gunshot. And it's not leaving a trace, right, but it's making holes, potentially.
I'd say
they would never ever
see a slingshot.
Yeah. They would never ever see like a person though, in conjunction with the shootings. Like they're always trying to find this phantom sniper, and they never could. And then what would kind of throw the police off is every once in a while they would find a blue marble at the sites of the shootings, but a lot of times the holes made in the windshields were so much smaller than a blue marble, you know, so it was almost like a cruel cosmic practical joke, but, you know, you just have all these odd things and you can't make heads or tails of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting, but it repeated over a period of time, you're saying, so it was something that, a phenomenon that was definitely happening then, right?
Yeah, like I said, there were at least over a dozen newspaper articles on it, you know, and I think, yeah, it lasted until the very end of February of 1928. And apparently a lot of times it was noiseless. Yeah, I guess it was pretty rare that you'd hear the gunshot, as I jog my memory.
But you'd think if something hit the windshield hard enough to put a hole in it, that might make a little bit of noise.
Unless it's plasma that changed the physical properties of it and just kind of like a quantum kind of thing went through it or something and just like deleted that physical particles or whatever at that moment, you know? I don't know. I'm going pretty theoretical there, but you never know.
I think that's pretty theoretical.
Yeah. Occam's razor, the simplest answer is it, right? I don't know.
But Occam's razor usually rules out quantum things.
True.
maybe there's a particle theory Occam's razor that we just are not aware of, and that would be it.
It's interesting, though.
You know,
interesting phenomenon.
You know, this is Dr. John. I will say that there are a lot of people that experience things like this, and they don't want to talk about them. I had that happen in Bishopville with Lizard Man, and I really couldn't get anybody that had actually seen the Lizard Man or experienced the Lizard Man to talk to me other than say, you know, this is what happened. Here's my number. I never could find him. I went out to visit their house. They wouldn't answer the door or anything. People don't like to talk about these things. And I experienced it firsthand. I mean, I was very fortunate when you were talking about a number of occurrences. I mean, I was excited that I got 14 newspaper articles. And that's what we have left from the Lizard Man, because none of the police reports are there. They're gone. They vanished from the police station. They say, well, we don't know where they are. And I mean, what? Come on, man. You know, you're supposed to keep police reports, last time I checked. Right, John LeMay? Aren't you supposed to keep police reports?
Oh, yeah. Especially for something like Lizard Man.
It's like, what am I supposed to say? And then when I call up and try to find out how the boy that was the first Lizard Man experiencer, he died. He had of gunshot wounds in a drug raid. Well, I
you
mean,
know,
they want
really
to charge me five.
Too.
No. Let me tell you this. They want to charge me $500 for research time to get me the information under the Freedom of Information Act. I thought the Freedom of Information Act was free because that's part of why we isn't that why we pay taxes. But they that's mm-hmm. not what they wanted to say. So it was like,
well, but John,
like
were lawyers involved? See, if there are lawyers involved, then nothing's free.
No, I mean, I called
that's,
up.
That's an immutable law of the universe.
Well, true.
You know that's true.
I understand what you're saying. But, I mean, they didn't even want to work with me. They just said, well, it'll be at least $500 because we'll have to do the research. We'll have to charge you. I said, but this is the Freedom of Information Act. No, we still have to charge. And that was it. You know, I mean, and
yeah.
they just blocked
that
it
doesn't
out.
Sound right. Yeah.
So what I'm saying is people know how to block you if you're doing research. And John LeMay, I don't know if you've experienced this, but I did, especially in the Bishopville, Sumter area, trying to do research on the lizard man. It just wouldn't work, so I had to rely on people.
They really did shut you down, John. I remember
they
you
did.
Telling me about that. Nobody
right.
wanted to
and
say anything.
Like,
the paperwork disappeared. The dog ate it. You know, it was just one lame-o excuse after another.
Right. It's like the dog died, the cat ran away, and it rained on my parade, and it's all over.
Uh-huh.
And I can't get it. And then one of my witnesses, one of my key witnesses, stopped talking to me. And it was just like, this is like they all got to him. But at least it's all going to be in the Lizard in Lizard Man, in the new Lizard Man book, the Lizard Man Companion. And I hope I'll still be alive every week to do Scarycast, because I'm going to tell you something. I'm really kind of worried when Lizard Man Companion comes out and people see what happened and people see how I was treated and how horrible it was. I mean, Dr. Donaway, because you're over there near Bishopville, just make sure that I'm still alive every week, okay?
I'll check in on you, John. I'll check in.
I know. Yeah. And you guys do, and I appreciate it. All right, John LeMay, our guest of honor tonight, what have you got to say? How would you like to conclude your findings, your research, your reporting? How would you like to conclude that for this Scarycast, which, by the way, has been what – I'm sorry, I've enjoyed it so much. I've got to tell some stories. I think all of us have enjoyed it so much. So tell us what you think. What do you want us to take away from this magnificent episode of Scarycast? 500 listeners.
Well, like the good book says, there's nothing new under the sun, and UFOs have been around forever. You know, Noe and I's new book, you know, again, it's called UFOs in the Roaring Twenties. Talks about UFO sightings from 100 years ago, not terribly different from the UFO sightings we still have today. So it's just, you know, an interesting perspective in history. And
what I find most interesting is when you're talking about the 20s, or certainly when you're talking about the 19th century, it's not like there are Chinese drones flying around.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like there's some experimental aircraft coming out of the local Air Force base, because it didn't exist then. So I think that's, to me, it seems almost more credible, because there's not the pollution of modern affecting things.
Yep, absolutely.
I mean, there are some amazing things, and you have uncovered them, John LeMay, in the Roaring Twenties.
Well, in this case, that was Noe. Like I said, I only did one, but Noe did a really great job, and I was kind of late to the party on this one. That's why I only got in my weird little Camden Cosmic Sniper story. But the book, like I said, Noe did a great job on it.
Well, I've got a question for you. Are we going to get... And the book that I want to get is 1946 to 1959. Are we going to get that book?
No, just because Noe and I feel like everybody else has already done that book, and it doesn't need to be done twice. So if we do anything on that era, we'll try and come up with our own unique spin on it. But, you know, so many good books on that era already exist, and we wanted to fill the void of the pre golden age of UFOs. So that was our goal.
You know, I'm a person that really appreciates the golden age, like the golden age of professional wrestling. It's something I deal with every week on our podcast and the Carolina Wrestling Hall of Fame. The golden age was nothing more than the golden age, and it was wonderful. And I have calls left and right, even today, from great wrestlers that want to be on our podcast, because they want us to remember their golden age. But I guess you're talking about the real golden age of UFOs, and probably about 1897 to 1940. Would you call that the golden age of UFOs?
Well, I call that the pre-Golden Age. I think the Golden Age was definitely the 1940s through the late 1950s. I think that's the Golden Age.
And the Eisenhower administration and all of the things that all the rumors that we've had about what Eisenhower did. I mean, I just think they're phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the great sightings, like the Rendlesham Forest sighting. Just, you know, it's still to this day, just chills me to the bone to read the Rendlesham Forest report and everything. So there's just so many great things happening. So anyway, we look forward to having you back because you're always a lot of fun to have to talk about this great stuff, and we appreciate you. We appreciate, of course, our hosts, Trey Donaway, Mark Johnston, Devin Tate, and Robin will be back with us, we hope, next week. And we'll probably ask her about that. If you could, John LeMay, get me some information on that Inuit village and let me ask Robin to do some remote viewing and see what she comes up with. And I will certainly let you know. Do you think we can do that?
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Well, thank you very much. And I want to say that this has been another landmark Scary Cast featuring John LeMay. We're just so glad to have you. It's been a lot of fun. Again, thanks to Trey Donaway, to Mark Johnston, to Devin Tate, and, of course, our guest, the one and only John LeMay. So we'll see you next week. We got an exciting show that we're working on right now. We'll see you next week on the one, the only, the greatest paranormal show on the Internet, Scary Cast. See ya.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.